This is Internet Marketing.
Hello, my name's Kelvin Newman, and welcome to this episode of the Internet Marketing Podcast, brought to you by the team behind Brighton SEO, the world's largest specialist search marketing event that also covers web analytics and paid search, and a bit of paid social as well. And it's paid search we're going to be talking about today. So in today's episode, I'm joined by Carl Johnson. We're going to be talking about what's happening now in paid search and pay-per-click advertising, and some of those changes and what's coming up next. So you, if you're doing paid search, you can kind of reassure yourself you're on the right track. And if you've not been doing a lot of paid search, it'll allow you to take your experience and your understanding of what is one of the most interesting areas of digital advertising and take that experience to the next level. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to the show again. I'm joined by a really interesting guest to talk about what I think is a really interesting topic around paid search. Now, in terms of my background, I started out as a search marketer. And did equally SEO and pay-per-click and sort of like spread my time between the two. But inevitably, as we start to get more and more involved with the Brighton SEO conference, I've tended to focus a little bit more on the SEO side of things rather than the paid search side of things. But I've tried to keep my eye in and ear in as best I possibly can. But it certainly does feel like the last 12 to 18 months, there's been a huge amount going on. So I'm kind of really interested to kind of have the chat with Carl today about some of the changes that he's seen. And changes not just in terms of the technology and the policies and the features of the search engines, but like more generally, like a slightly more strategic approach that people might take to paid search. So Carl, yeah, thanks for joining us, first of all. It'd be great to get a sort of whistle-stop tour of your background and kind of the Kyle story, I suppose.
Yeah, sure. And thanks for inviting me. So yeah, I've been doing paid search for almost 10 years. In the last kind of 3 years, I've kind of branched out from paid search to paid media in general. I mean, paid search has moved on so quickly, and you know, speaking to colleagues earlier on this week, that something new drops what feels like pretty much every week in paid search. But yeah, it's it primarily my responsibilities and kind of what I'm working on right now is kind of building a paid media team here at 26, and really helping clients step outside of the comfort zone, kind of from basic paid search into paid media activation across everything from affiliates, display, paid social, and then obviously paid search. So yeah,
cool. I definitely think that'd be an interesting topic for us to dive into as we get into today's episode, is that kind of journey from a paid search campaign to a paid media campaign, and like how people might do that, because I definitely feel like that could be an interesting, yeah. But actually, let's start off with that. We'll throw the plans we were talking about out the window.
Yeah, sure.
But if that's okay. But yeah, I'm really kind of interested in that. Like, I can imagine we've got listeners who might do a bit of paid search, or maybe even have a relatively mature paid search campaign, maybe a tiny bit of meta advertising. How does that, you know, what are some of the things that an advertiser would want to think about if they're starting to kind of go from like small little paid search campaign, works quite well, to kind of starting to be a bit more kind of fully fledged paid media? Is that a good journey to go through? Is it a decision you don't want to take lightly? How does the process work for that?
Yeah, sure. So we've been helping clients do this for the last 3 years, it is a mind shift change, and part of the reason why we changed the way that our team function itself. So I mentioned that, you know, the first part of my career it was mainly looking at PPC, search keywords, shopping, and obviously now PMax. But I suppose we've seen the shift with Google and what they've been doing with their product types. So, you know, with the introduction of PMax demand generation, they've been introducing newer formats, newer placements like Discover, YouTube, Shorts is obviously trending there as well. And I suppose with this comes different types of activity. And I suppose different ways that we have to measure the activity. So that's what I meant around kind of mind shift changes. So search and shopping for the longest time, and to be fair, up until today, is it's really well measured. without kind of sounding kind of too blunt, like it's kind of the crack cocaine of paid media. You know, you can turn it on and you get your instant hit. You know, you put your money in and you can get it out. When you start activating activity outside of paid search and shopping, That's where you need to start looking at it slightly differently, because whilst it is helping drive brands and businesses, you know, you don't see that kind of instant reward from it. And I think this is the biggest shift that brands have been having to make. It's something that people do need to do. And without doing it, they are falling behind competitors. So the analogy that I use is paid search and shopping to a certain extent is kind of just goal hanging. You're just waiting for that person to come and make that final search. Everything from kind of paid social awareness, display, we're doing a lot of CTV with clients, that's to get people to search, that's to market your product, that's to get people excited about wanting to buy your specific product, and that should then filter down into your search and shopping. That's helping brands move on. So we've had clients come to us where they're saying, look, we've been doing search and shopping for 10 years, we think that we're doing this really well, the brand's falling, what do we need to do? And this is where that mind shift does need to kind of happen. They need to think around things outside of that bottom of the funnel and start investing time and money into having conversations with people further up the funnel.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because there's only so far you can get if you're kind of, yeah, just trying to grab the people who already decided that they're about to purchase what it is that you sell. And yeah, that kind of, yeah, I suppose there's two sides to that, right? One is that, yeah, like if nobody's doing that top of funnel activity, then there's not really going to be anyone in the bottom of the funnel, right? For you to steal from anyone else. And I suppose also if you're doing that in the right way, that should improve or at least like contribute to the performance for the bottom of the funnel stuff, right, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there will definitely be a benefit that you get from your competitors doing that upper funnel, because, you know, they're doing a lot of work and, you know, search and shopping is still very important. And that's coming a lot, come on a long way. And, you know, we'll talk in a bit around what we need to do from like a search and shopping point of view to maximize effectiveness there. But yeah, there's been loads of studies where, kind of Google have worked with like Nielsen and McKinsey to understand what's the improvement in bottom of the line activity. So that you're kind of remarketing your keyword campaign, shopping campaign, when you've got larger branding campaigns running. And I mean, the kind of the main kind of statistics and kind of findings from those studies is that people click through to your ads at a higher rate when they've seen your ads from a branding point of view. People are more likely to buy from you once they've actually seen your branding. When somebody is looking for a specific product, they already have brands in mind on what, you know, in regards to what they will do when they actually purchase that product. And you're much more likely to get purchased, somebody's much more likely to purchase from you if you are in kind of a upper funnel kind of slot versus somebody that is just kind of bottom of the funnel. There are limitations to your growth where you are just kind of sat in that channel and not really engaging with your customers outside of that.
No, I think that's interesting. Yeah, because it definitely is that. And I suppose the ecosystem has changed where you've got more of these marketplaces as well, where they're going to do, you know, they're so well placed. This is maybe more e-commerce than other kind of sectors. But yeah, that similar kind of like, why would they not just buy from Amazon and Amazon take their big chunk that they're doing? You know, you need to have a reason why they choose for you. And that's, you know, if they trust you or see you as a specialist, that's going to help in those sort of areas, right?
Yeah, 100%. And that's the one thing that I think, especially in search and SEM, paid media, I feel like there's so many different synonyms for what we do now. But that's the one thing that will be the biggest shift in the next, I'd say 5 years. And that's from being massively focused on extensive keyword lists and number crunching to, I'll say it just, yeah, becoming marketeers and actually marketing a product, because, why would somebody buy a product from you instead of Amazon or, you know, Argos or, like you said, any other marketplace? You need to tell people why they should buy from you and market your brand, market your business and market your product slightly differently so that you do stand out.
And so for the people who have perhaps been away from paid search, one of the big things for me that it feels like there's been, you know, talked about a lot, and certainly in terms of the people who have been pitching to speak at our events around paid search, is this idea of PMAX then. So for people who are kind of like perhaps not quite so familiar with paid search and not following the changes that have occurred over the last couple of years of that, how can you describe that, and what are some of the ways in which that might then start to feed into this slightly more marketing approach to advertising rather than the kind of like more transactional like performance only side of things?
Yeah, so PMAX is Google's I suppose all in one campaign, which helps brands meet their marketing objectives. So within PMax, you can have a specific objective and then Google will try to find your customers wherever they are across, you know, obviously Google's network. There has been skepticism, and it's for the right reasons. But yeah, PMax is doing kind of fantastic across all our clients, both e-commerce, lead gen, and, you know, providing, you know, you're giving it the right inputs. There's kind of loads of different data inputs that PMax need, and, you know, I can kind of outline a couple of them. And then equally, that we report incorrectly, PMax is kind of a tool that, you know, advertisers need to use to make sure that they are staying competitive. I mean, in many ways, we're seeing that Google are favouring PMax across and above other campaign types, and we are seeing that, you know, certain advertisers are getting the benefit from using the campaign type. But yeah, PMax is essentially a campaign type where you're giving it a budget, you're giving it your ad copy, telling it what you're trying to achieve, and then it goes out, tries to find the customers to achieve that target, regardless of where they are, what they're searching for, and obviously what kind of networks they're on, whether it be YouTube search or Discover.
Yeah, and it certainly feels like that's the direction of travel, isn't it? Like, you know, obviously for all kinds of reasons, but like given that, like, I suppose artificial intelligence is part of that as well, that there's this, yeah, growing desire to buy the places where you can buy advertising to make it easier for as many people as possible to set up their campaigns and, you know, do the job for them. But obviously, like, if you're a practitioner or a person who's kind of used to that granular involvement and, you know, often quite good, and that's the value that you're adding, it can be tricky to kind of go, yeah, we'll go just let this bit of software do it. And like, and obviously to some extent, that's a lot better than the bad campaigns that many people would set up, but perhaps it's not quite as strong as the great campaigns that people might be doing. And maybe is that where the tension's coming from? That's like, actually, for your average advertiser, it might bring up the quality of their campaign and the success they're having. But actually, for other advertisers, because it's removing a level of control, that's going to be the challenge there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I will say you can have bad PMax campaigns, and I've definitely audited bad PMax campaigns. And there is kind of an argument to be had around the type of advertiser that's right for PMax. So Google would say everybody should be on PMax. And I mean, for clients that have a really small amount of conversion data, I'd argue and say they could probably do it better without using PMax. PMax does need a lot of data to understand what audiences to target and, you know, what's working quite well. But yeah, PMax in itself isn't a set it and forget it campaign, and it heavily relies on kind of our input. I did a bit of a blog, it's probably a few months ago, around just AI in general and my thoughts on AI, and, you know, the kind of the way we speak about AI at 26 and the team speaks about it. And for now, I'm going to say for now, because it's getting so much better, but for now, we don't fear it. We're not scared to use it. It's not stealing our jobs. We're using it as a tool to make our campaigns better. But it really does need our input to make sure that it is doing as good as it can. So I mentioned around some of the inputs. So depending on the objectives and the industry, the inputs are different. But let's talk around kind of an e-commerce client and the key inputs that you need to put into a PMax and then the optimizations that come after it. So to start with, for a client that is running shopping, we obviously need to input a feed, feed quality. So I mean, sorry, my legs have just got off. So yeah, the feed quality is massively important. Back when it was shopping, 100% of search terms fired based on just the feed terms alone. Now I think it's maybe 90% of search terms based on the feed. So the feed quality is so important. PMax doesn't know who to target unless the quality of that feed and the data in that feed is correct. So that's number one, are we optimizing feeds? The actual creative, so PMax does need extra creative in order to serve across YouTube, Gmail and Discover. That needs to be well optimized. We need to be using all the insights that we've got to feed that data into PMax to make sure that it can, you know, do like a pre-roll on YouTube, so it can do native ads and discover and really find people.
I suppose that's it, isn't it? It's that kind of like it's an efficient thing, right? And it, like, if you've not got it set up well, it's like exacerbating the inefficiencies. And actually, you can do all these things, but if you're not putting all the bits in, it's actually, yeah, you're not really taking advantage of the...
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose the last thing with PMax is it's a conversion campaign for the most part, and making sure that conversions are accurate is obviously number one. So, I mean, from an e-commerce point of view, you optimize it towards revenue, so I mean, that's fine. It's making sure they're as full as they can be. So implementing stuff like enhanced conversions and consent mode to make sure that there's kind of, yeah, a full data for many drops off in, you know, consent. That's important, but equally from a lead gen point of view, PMax is susceptible to fraud. And the kind of the best way to overcome that is making sure that we are feeding Google and the algorithms data on what makes a good lead. So instead of it just being getting as many leads as you can, and you know, essentially Google driving really low CPA, but the leads being not that great, you're actually feeding the quality of leads back into Google and saying, look, this is a high quality lead. And then it focuses on those audiences that are likely to be a high quality candidate.
Cool. And I know one topic that you're really interested in, and like, you know, coming up at our search and social advertising show in Brighton in a few weeks' time by the time this goes out. I know kind of one of the topics you're talking about there is around this kind of move from keywords to conversations. Could you explain kind of like how, yeah, the logic behind that? And I suppose it builds upon some of the things we were just talking about, right, in terms of this kind of ever more sophisticated systems that are available to paid search and paid media advertisers.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, just for context, from a PPC point of view, like, for as long as I've known, the kind of main challenges and I suppose optimizations and work that we've done is to build out vast amounts of keywords, monitor search terms. You know, you're adding negative keywords, so it based on, you know, things that you don't want to show for, and that's been a way to optimize and make sure that we're showing ads to those people that are most likely to convert for, you know, our customers and. The brands that we work with. There are a growing number of searches on Google. So there's, I think, I'm going to have to get the percentages up, or maybe I do a plug after to kind of show all the stats. But, you know, each day there's a growing number of brand new searches to Google. And there's kind of billions of searches a week on Google. So to try to keep up to date with all the keywords and all different variants that people are searching, it's just not possible. And then kind of moving into 2024, like, people are demanding more from everything, from advertisers, from search engines, from kind of companies, and they want you to understand them. And the issue with keywords is that you don't really get context on keywords. You can assume context, and, you know, this is something that again, we've always built into our campaign. So, you know, you build keywords out, you've got your kind of head term keyword, which would be, you know, a gift. And then you've got a long tail keyword, which might be, you know, gifts for a wedding. And you'd split things out so that you could, you know, improve the chances of somebody converting. But again, in 2024, Google have built tools to essentially understand the context of what people are searching so that we can be less subjective and essentially tell Google what we're trying to achieve. And then using the AI, it can, you know, kind of pair our ads with what people are searching. So kind of going back to your point on kind of keywords to conversations, the main kind of shift has been switching from vast amount of exact keywords to broader keywords and pairing broad keywords with smart bidding. For those that don't know, smart bidding essentially changes bids at auction level. So for me and you to make a search right now on Google, we will get different results based on the fact that Google is changing, like I said, bids for ads on every single auction. So you've got a different search history, you're a different demographic, even in a different location. By all these kind of different signals, it's trying to understand the context of your search, different to my search, and then present an ad. And we could search that same keyword and want different things.
Yeah, I think that's it. Ability to kind of understand that, like, yeah, I like, you know, two people searching for, I don't know, like a generic term, like, yeah, maybe like a kind of like wedding gift. But then if someone else is kind of, well, they've, you know, been part of a search journey, they've been to multiple websites before, you know, and if even just at the simple level, like two people completely identical, one's been to your website before, one hasn't been to your website before, they're of different value to you, right? But that's before you stack on all of these other things that are available now, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, you gave a good example there, like gifts are good. Well, we've got a client that is in the gifting sector, and Switching to Broadmatch and pairing it with Smart Bidding has transformed what we do for them, especially outside of their peak period. This specific client sells hampers, and prior to AI and Smart Bidding, there was no way we could bid on the word gift, because somebody could be looking for a toy, somebody could be looking, like you said, as you know, for a wedding gift, which could potentially be relevant to them, but it could be anything. But kind of pairing it with Smart Bidding has allowed us to bid on something like gift, which means that these guys are eligible to show for so much more of inventory, but equally it's to people that are most likely to buy from them. So again, to your point before, if I've been on some of their main competitors' websites, if I've searched for their type of products before, I'm much more likely to see an ad when I search for gift from them. Whereas if you do potentially look for toys, or you know, if you're kind
you've never had any interaction with those types of websites ever before, that's a very different potential customer.
So and that's where the advantage is. So I mean, it's not only around efficiency in what you're doing, it's about widening that scope. It's really hard to kind of accept it, because especially when taking on new accounts or doing restructures, you'd build thousands of keywords, and it's really proud. You know, you found brand new keywords. They used to be like golden keywords we used to find back in the days. So it's like, this keyword, you found it, nobody's on it. Yeah. But I mean, those days are gone, and you know, we've shrunk a client's keyword base and managed to grow the volume by using broad keywords, pairing it Smart Bidding, whilst improving, you know, the performance of it. So, and, you know, this is where we kind of say AI is there to support us. And it's just better than humans at certain bits. It's about how can we use it to better ourselves, better our clients.
And I think you've referred to it as like a paradigm shift, and I think that's kind of an interesting way of thinking about it, isn't it? Because sometimes it's like, well, actually, you know, it'd be easy for a marketer to be a bit resistant to that, either because they've been on a campaign before, or they've got their kind of historical way of performing things. And as the technology is shifting, and you know, maybe initial iterations weren't quite as, you know, successful as we might have wanted to be, and that certainly can create some interesting, like, yeah, incentives, right, where actually the opportunities are sometimes like downplayed because people are like resistant to the change that might
absolutely. And I think that's one thing that we've had to take note of. I mean, when I first started PPC, we used to use third-party tools for bidding, and the main reason for that is because Google Ads bidding was awful. Google, and they said it, and a lot of people weren't sure whether that it was true, but Google have been using AI for, you know, probably around 10 years in their ad space, and you know, the kind of compounding impact on the development of AI is just ridiculous. So this is why we do need to keep testing and testing and testing and testing. You know, some of the older tactics are invaluable, and you know, they're not dead. There are still benefits of exact match keywords. There are instances where you do want to have your exacts in there. You definitely want to be on wedding gifts, because my, you know, main product is wedding gifts. I want to make sure that Google know that, and Google recognize it as well, and they've added new features into the account so that you can tell the algorithm that. So, you know, back to my point before around PMAX isn't a set it and forget it. You need to tell it things and input data. Sometimes the data is a keyword. So, you know, Google brought out search themes a few months ago, and that was essentially to add keywords in. So, you know, you're worried that Google isn't showing ads for certain search terms or for certain themes. Tell it what you want it to look at, and then it'll explore it. First party data, put your first party data in. There's so much information about your customers that Google potentially doesn't know. By adding that in, again, you see improvements in data. So it's just that thing around, what can you give to this campaign type to improve what you're doing, instead of just saying, actually, it's not working because it's not doing this. Well, actually,
you can make your help.
It can't do it by itself. Like, it's still, you know, you're still that paid manager, PPC manager. We need to make it work. It's just understanding what does it need to make it work. And Google's doing so much work on output. So the biggest thing that our team started using is the Insights tab. And the Insights tab gives you a whole host of insights. But one thing that I find really useful is the audience insights. And the main reason for that is it tells you some really obvious things about the customer, which you can actually do something about. So we've got a hotel client, and they've got hotels all across the UK, and the hotels are used for different things based on, you know, where they are. So they've got city centre hotels, and an audience insight for that is people that are club night enthusiasts, people that love theatre shows. We've also got like country hotels, and you know, the age demographic for those hotels are higher based on what Google are seeing. Make ads for these people, put it into PMax. You know, those ads will resonate better with the audiences and you'll get better performances. It's about using all the data you get from, you know, Google and kind of the PMax insights and feeding that back in to make the campaigns better. It's kind of a continuous thing and you cannot set it and forget it. Yeah. You need to keep it input in for now. Yeah.
That's exciting. I mean, it's left me feeling kind of like, maybe I'm kind of like a bit skeptical of some of these things. And actually, it's like, no, I think you've done a really good job there of kind of like, talking about what you can do, but also being realistic about what's available and not on that side of things. Carl, one thing I always like to ask our speakers and our guests when they're on the podcast is about kind of like a resource or like recommendation they might have for people. It could be a newsletter, could be a course, could be a book, could be a like a website. Is there any kind of particular ones that spring to mind to you for things that you'd recommend that people should maybe check out? And we'll include this in the show notes as well for the people who are.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So for paid media at the moment, I think it's about staying up to date, and there's kind of three ways that I like to stay up to date. So LinkedIn, that sounds like an obvious one, but I mean, definitely for people that are just starting out, get on LinkedIn, follow your peers, connect with your peers. People are posting loads of content and loads of useful content. So it's just FYIs, there's new scripts, there's new innovations. So get on LinkedIn, get following people, get speaking with people, because whilst, you know, there are competitors, like I work in an agency, you know, a lot of the people in agencies and leads I do see as my peers and my colleagues, and you know, collectively we're helping each other kind of as an agency come up. So LinkedIn is a key resource, and then there's just a couple of blog sites that I do keep an eye on. So Search Engine Land is obviously a known blog, which is always up to date with kind of the newest things within paid media, and Search Engine Hubbub. That's really interesting blog from a guy called Dan. It's kind of evolved over the last, I think, maybe 6 years, but that's definitely a blog to look out for there.
Fantastic. Cool. Well, some great resources there. And we talked about LinkedIn. So is that if people want to keep up with you, Carl, in terms of what you're up to, is the LinkedIn the best place to do that? Any other?
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of keep up to date on your stuff?
Absolutely, yeah. I feel like, unlike SEO, which I know has a massive buzz on Twitter, I don't think paid media is quite there. So, for now, LinkedIn.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Cool. Well, we'll include the links there. Yeah, thanks so much for joining us, Carl. Yeah, I think that's a really, I took a lot away from that. I'm sure our listeners will as well. Definitely keep in touch with Carl. I recommend adding him on LinkedIn. And we'll see you all again soon. As always, the recommendations, let us know if there's anyone you'd like to see on a future episode. And please do keep in touch. And thanks, Carl. And we'll see you all soon. Thanks very much, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us for today's episode of the Internet Marketing Podcast, produced by the team behind Brighton SEO, the world's largest specialist digital marketing conference covering SEO, PPC, paid social, web analytics, and content marketing. If you want to find out more about us and the show, you can check out the website, internetmarketingpodcast.org. And if you've not already subscribed to the show, you should hit that subscribe button. And can I ask a favor, if you are subscribed and you're enjoying the show, can you leave us a review wherever you're watching or listening to the show? And if you want to get in touch, become a guest on the show, or just generally feedback about what we're doing, you can always email me. That's kelvin@brightonseo.com. So kelvin@brightonseo.com. Or of course, you can contact me on social media. So at LinkedIn or Twitter, my usernames are Kelvin Newman. See you soon.